Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What's up, delegates, and welcome back to episode 2 of Spirits and Sports History on the Believe Podcast Network and also on sportsaldente.com, your home for LA sports. Very excited for episode 2. Got a great story for you in the realms of the sports world and welcomed by, I'm going to call him a soon-to-be famous actor, the Duke. Michael Tomsu. What's up, my man?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad you're here.
Thank you for having me on your wonderful podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're a part of this too, so extremely excited to have you on, and there'll be many more of you on. So,
thanks, man.
Yeah, so the story we're going to be having on here soon, Michael actually wrote himself, so be excited for that. We'll be reading it together, but it's his own writing, his own words, and... yeah, it's great. So, well done, my friend.
Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Yeah. So, what are you up to? Tell everyone that's listening kind of what you do, and I'm putting you on the spot. We didn't prep this. We didn't prep this pre-show, but it just came to me. I'm like, I want to, you know, let's learn about you. Let's learn about the Duke.
I suppose busy being one of the many cogs in the LA machine, more specifically in the film and television industry, grinding away, like many, to make a career as an actor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, which is why I really appreciate the opportunity to write and be creative with you and, you know, sit down and hang out and have a few beers and tell a story.
Well, hey, creativity is best shared together, right?
Agreed. So,
and where are you originally from?
I'm from London, United Kingdom, from a borough called... New Southgate / Enfield, like right on the border of those two.
You sound like you forgot there for
a second. Yeah, I did, yeah.
You've been here for so long.
I've been here for a while, yeah.
Yeah, you're an American now.
It's true, and I love it.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen, yep, like you go home, you wear the American flags, like you have the boxer shorts, all that. So, well, hey, welcome back. Welcome to Spirits and Sports History.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
It's good. Today we have a very fun episode, and we're obviously going to start the show with what we do, our spirits history. Spirits meaning a certain kind of alcohol, and today we chose a beer that kind of coincides with the story we're going to tell, which I'm not going to give it away, but it's someone that is from your homeland, your other side of the pond.
That's right.
And Carlsberg.
Yes.
The beer.
Yes.
Delicious beer.
Delicious, right?
Delicious.
Without giving too much away, we've sunk the majority of the surplus we had to, you know, like while we were doing this podcast and recording it to drink. We're down to our last one each.
In preparation, obviously, a lot of work goes into this.
We don't just start
recording and decide that we're great podcasters. You have to do research and so there was research that went into this.
Research, putting your body through rigorous regimes.
Exactly.
Like sinking bottles of Carlsberg.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen Beer Fest, right?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So I mean, I wouldn't put it on the level of Beer Fest over at 51 Yard Line Studios in Pasadena, California, but we had our own enjoyment of Carlsberg, and I'm gonna say it's a delightful beer.
It really is. Yeah, I can't fault it.
Yeah, I hadn't had it before. First sip I had, I'm not gonna lie, it reminded me of Heineken. I don't want that to be blasphemy.
No, I don't think
jump
so.
Off the page of me, but that's what it reminded me of a little bit.
Well, you know, like as we had mentioned earlier, it's Carlsberg's Danish. Heineken is where did we find it? It was from Holland.
Yeah.
So they're neighbors. They're close. So there's probably a very similar approach to brewing beer.
I would think so. I would think so. And we learned a lot through the kind of research we did about this Carlsberg brewery, Carlsberg Group, if you will. And it's really fascinating, just the imprint that they have and have left on the beer community. Agreed. And, you know, it starts back to when they were founded back in 1847. So obviously a lot of life on this brewery.
Yeah.
J.C. Jacobsen was the founder of Carlsberg. And the name, I love the name. Now learning cool. more about it. So JC, also known as Jacob Christian, his son, they named Carl.
Yep.
And the word Bergs is translated to hill.
Right.
And so they founded their first brewery. It was up on a hill. And so they, in English, would name that Carl's Hill.
Right.
And so hence Carlsberg.
That's cool.
It's yeah. such a fascinating and awesome, because I mean, we love small businesses. We love businesses that start like in the family.
Sure.
And now Carlsberg is a very, very prominent company. It's been around for 140 whatever
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was founded based on his son's name
yeah.
and based on a small plotted building on a top of a hill.
Sure. Sure.
Carl's Hill beer.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and you see, as the story unfolds, like the more we research this, that kind of integrity and family approach, that family philosophy continues on, really, doesn't it? You know, that kind of that generosity of spirit. All right, well, what was the next kind of big event in the Carlsberg history?
You know, there was one huge one, and I want you to really hit on it because you were the one kind of found it, and
right.
it's fascinating because it not only plays a major role in the beer community,
yeah,
but it plays a major role in just science and the
yeah.
world.
It's mad. It's mad. We were both
blown
like
away,
baffled. Yeah, absolutely by this. It's like we're both, you know, virile young men, in our late 20s, early 30s, we drink a lot of beer, have drunk. Beer is a crucial component in our day to day, but
it's a part of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we both at other, you know, one time or another had some interest in the brewing process, you mm-hmm. know. But so essentially, I'm gonna delve into this a little bit very quickly.
Break it down.
Carlsberg. We're responsible for creating the pH system. So there's a gentleman called Søren P.L. Sorensen who developed the pH scale. And I don't know, I certainly wasn't familiar with exactly what that was. I had a vague idea what that meant.
We've all got a school and all dozed off and
yeah,
not paid
yeah.
attention, but we heard that term at
yeah.
some point or another.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So essentially, he developed the pH scale and, conducted this research into proteins, amino acids, and enzymes, which is the foundation of today's, you know, protein chemistry, right? So it was invented in 1909. pH means the power of hydrogen, and the scale essentially gives us a way of understanding the amount of hydrogen in any given thing in a solution. So he created a scale from 0 to 14 to mm-hmm. determine a solution's acidity, right? So during the brewing process, this pH scale was revolutionary, and its applications since have been countless. This is the thing that I find astounding and beautiful about this brewery, these people, these monumental figures responsible for the Carlsberg name, is instead of withholding this information and making, you know, a disgusting amount of money off this development.
Disgusting amount.
Yeah. They shared it with the world. They shared it with fellow brewers.
Mm-hmm.
So that the quality of beer all around would be of a high level, and doing our research, it's speculated that they probably liked the idea that there would be a little bit of Carlsberg in every beer that used this this pH scale.
Totally,
but I mean that I think goes a long way to explain this clean kind of crisp flavor that we both mm-hmm. seem to be experiencing with this beer.
Enjoying
is the
good word, and it yeah, how fascinating is it that something so important to the scientific community came from a brewer.
Absolutely.
Came from a
Absolutely.
Beer
yeah.
brewer.
If you need any more evidence that we should all be drinking beer or exploring the brewing,
right?
You know, philosophy, the brewing universe, look no further than Carlsberg.
Yeah. There's people out there that are, stick to science
mm-hmm.
and all this, the importance of law and all this, and, you know, stay away from alcohol. And it's like, well, all your foundation
is
just collapsed because guess what?
Yeah.
What you believe in is Carlsberg beer.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, it's a delicious, refining lager. Mm-hmm. I discovered even that Cronenberg 1664, a great beer I enjoy out of France, is in the same brewery. Yeah,
absolutely.
Under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
So that's fun. Yeah, Carlsberg's great. And let's get into real quick before we get into our story, and this kind of leads into what the story is going to, what Carlsberg means to not only England, but specifically a team in England that played in the Premier
League. Right. Yeah, yeah. Liverpool FC.
Yeah.
Now owned by the Fenway Group, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah, they're becoming Americanized. Colonized, if you will. However you want to call
reverse
it.
Reverse colonized.
Yeah, reverse colonized.
I like that.
Yeah. One if by land, two if by sea.
So, I mean, essentially they've created the record for the longest sponsorship with a Premier League team.
Yeah.
Yeah, since 92.
Dating back to 1992.
1992. I know growing up as a kid, Carlsberg just meant Liverpool. Like, you know, I mean, before I was old enough to really understand what beer actually was.
Which was like what, like 4 or 5
years old? Yeah, 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 exactly.
In diaper days.
Yes, exactly. And, yeah. You'd see Carlsberg and you'd just think Liverpool, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I hit probably a little too early to be drinking beer, I remember trying Carlsberg for the first time at a pub, getting in underage, and it was, you know, even as an inexperienced beer drinker, it tasted like what I imagined beer to taste like. You know, it was kind of thirst quenching, strangely enough, and crisp, had a nice snap to it. That kind of, there's a quite high carbonation on it.
Yeah.
It's
fascinating you say that, because I feel like, at least over here in America,
yeah,
and I love hearing you tell that story, because every American high schooler just envisions this beauty and like quality of drinking a beer.
Sure.
And then we sink our teeth into a Budweiser or a Coors, which I've grown to love. So I'm not talking trash on.
Yeah.
But when that is your first sip, you want to vomit.
Yeah, yeah.
It is
sure.
not thirst questing.
No, no.
It is not crisp.
No.
It is not pure.
No.
It is not any of the words you just use to describe a beer.
Sure.
So I think that just puts on a pedestal this Carlsberg, which is really a really nice, fine drinking beer that any man, any woman can enjoy.
I agree. No, I agree. I you know, we were both you know, we were chatting about this earlier. I think with Carlsberg, so we should add that Carlsberg has renewed their sponsorship with Liverpool and continue their commercial relationship, so to speak, till I think it was the year 2024, 2025
is in that realm.
Yeah,
those 3 years. Somewhere. we'll just say it's a gray area from 23 to 25.
Sure,
somewhere in there.
Which, you know, as I mentioned before, like, you know, I feel like there's this kind of growth in interest with soccer in the US. You know, that's undeniable at this point. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Carlsberg in more and more bars and you know, pubs out here, especially the English ones. Because it's just a satisfying beer. I mean, I don't think that you can go wrong with that, you know, especially in here in LA where the heat, you know, tends to make you want something a little bit more
thirst quenching.
Yeah, yeah,
100%, 100%. And I can speak. We're both sitting here in Los Angeles and in the 90-degree heat, so we can speak wholeheartedly that it is thirst quenching, delicious. We're drinking it as we talk, but yeah, Carlsberg, great history, even better tasting, which is. You know, we're going to be real on this show. If there's a beer or a whiskey or a spirit, anything we taste that is not up to what we like, we're going to say it. And Carlsberg, it kind of blew me away. It was good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, knocked the doors off. So Well, there we go. I mean, a little bit of history on the company. Awesome. Created the pH level. I mean, I'm looking at this picture right now. I feel like I'm watching The Prestige. You remember that movie? With Christian Bale.
Yeah.
these guys here look like the Illuminists.
No, yeah, the facial hair game of these homies, these Carlsberg OGs, is off the charts.
Yeah.
The facial hair is phenomenal. Yeah. I implore you to go online, go onto the Carlsberg website, and then go onto the Pioneers page and just take a look at this photo.
Glorious. I mean,
glorious.
If you've seen that movie on Netflix, A Thousand Ways to Die.
Oh, yeah.
And Neil Patrick Harris has the shop that's the mustache.
Yeah.
The mustache shop with the waxes.
Yes.
These guys clearly shop there.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that they were in America. They're in Belgium.
Yeah,
whatever.
Carlsberg, the pioneers of facial hair and beer.
And beer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, because what's a beer if you can't lap up the suds off of your top lip off the moustache?
Yeah.
You know?
It's not worth drinking.
Agreed,
I don't think it's worth drinking. I mean, we're both sitting here with moustaches.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're lapping it off of our mic phones, too, so we're good. We got double the pleasure. So, great. Well, I'm excited to get this story that you wrote.
Yeah, I'm
excited. What kind of inspired you, before we get into it, what inspired you about this story? And don't give away too much. Don't divulge too much. But,
sure.
But what was it that drew you to this story?
I think at the core of it, it's the story, a story that we all kind of relate to of taking on something that you're compelled to do despite the odds that are stacked against you, you know what I mean? Despite, you know, really in any given moment in life, things kind of tend to be stacked against you, you know?
Of course,
even if you're playing, you know, you're living a very nice, you know, life and playing the long game and, you know, saving up for a house, whatever, or maybe you bought a house, but, you know, paying that mortgage, you know, just, you know what I mean? Just that kind of idea that life can be very weighty and oftentimes you don't really find yourself in the situation you want to be.
Yeah.
And how sometimes you just have to say, you know, screw it and go against that voice and not listen to it.
Totally.
It, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we say this all the time, but I mean, the grind.
Yeah, that's exactly the word for it. You know, you nailed it.
We have the grind.
The grind.
And it's about just living for the grind.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that grind pays off.
Yes.
And the story exemplifies that to a T.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I love it. You did a phenomenal job writing it. I appreciate you allowing me to at least read with you for it.
Beautiful experience, man.
Yeah, it was great. So without further ado, the Duke, Michael Tomsu, and myself, and please enjoy this latest story on spirits and sports history. Beetroots. Ricky was not averse to them. Neither was he particularly fond of them. He had never really given them any thought at all. They were one of those things in life that could disappear off the face of the earth, and he'd probably never notice. But these days, beetroots had been on his mind a lot. After all, he had been hired in Merseyside's only beetroot bottling plant, so they paid his rent. The only irony wasn't lost on him.
In a few short months, he had worked his way up from a production intern to a bottling line associate to a bottling line assistant, and now he was in the factory opposite Mr. Philbin, the plant manager, discussing his promotion to lead line production supervisor. "You're a polite, hard-working lad, Ricky. I know you've only been here a short while, but I've been doing this long enough to spot raw talent like yours."
It was a surprise that had risen the ranks so quickly, considering his indifference to the job. And Ricky's inherent belief was that if you're going to spend most of your active lives doing a thing, it should be a thing that you love. But here he was, a little tempted, in all honesty, by how the extra £3.17 an hour might change his life.
In time, he'd be able to repair the electric windows on his Nissan Micra. Or take his girlfriend out to the new Indian restaurant on High Street and get tipsy there instead of having to relocate to the local Wetherspoons after dinner. He was genuinely appreciative of the offer, but the thought of him being in the beetroot business didn't sit quite right with him.
"Can I take the day to think about it, sir?"
asked Ricky sheepishly.
"Of course, but remember son, these large decisions best come from the gut, not the head."
Ricky exited with a conservative smile. As he unbuttoned the top of his gray overalls and made his way to the break room, He was startled by the hacking sound of Barry Barker's lungs, psyching themselves up for an impending smog of Benson and Hedges' gold cigarettes.
Oh, bit shocker today, eh, Legs?
Ricky nodded, still reeling from the horrible sound of Barker's pained respiratory system.
One a bifty, chortled Barker, rattling his 20-deck of cigarettes like a Merseyside maraca.
Ricky, as a force of habit, shook his head, but stopped suddenly, leaving his chin at a slight angle, causing him to appear erudite and model-like, which wasn't recommended in a place like the plant. You'd likely earn yourself an unwanted nickname, but now, if ever, was the time for a smoke. Barker called Ricky Legs because for months prior to starting his career bottling beats, he was playing football, professionally, for Blackpool FC, a second division team at the time. It was here, as a 17-year-old upstart, he struggled to make his mark, playing a few games as a sub and eventually being released after the team was relegated to Division 3. Barry Barker had just so happened to be a huge football fan and would never forget the shock and awe he felt the day he saw Ricky filling out his paperwork on the first day at the plant. It was like something out of the Twilight Zone. In a span of a few weeks, they became good friends, despite the age gap. Ricky had been there for Barker throughout the tragic loss of his 10-year-old daughter Bella, covering shifts and visiting Barker and his wife almost every single day.
Outside, by the cargo entrance of the plant, Barker slapped open the top of his Zippo lighter engraved with the words, "You will never walk alone." "Hear you're up for a promotion?" asked Barker before taking the deepest, longest drag Ricky had ever witnessed. "Yeah? You gonna take it?" "Likely will, aye." "Shouldn't be smoking if you want to get back on the pitch," he smiled through his leathery face. "You still dream of Anfield?" Barker continued. Anfield was the home stadium of Liverpool Football Club and the arena of almost all of Ricky's desires.
Barker's eyes watered a little, and then he carried on.
"I still do. I were with Bella. We were front row in the main stand. She was eating a pack of cheese and onion crisps and picking her teeth like she would always afterwards. She spotted you on the pitch. You were wearing white. In the box, the ball rockets towards you. You rise up. Bloody well flying without wings. You meet the ball." Ricky's eyebrows raised impatiently. He wanted to hear the result. "Then I woke up."
Tears trickled down Barker's cheeks, through his 5 o'clock shadow and onto the floor.
"Don't ever stop chasing it, Rick. Don't ever stop dreaming. Don't leave her in the stands, man. She were waiting for you. Waiting to cheer you on."
An aggressive buzz signaled that it was time to get back to work. So Barker wiped his cheeks off and stubbed his ciggy out with his boot heel. He winked at Ricky and shuffled back in.
Ricky couldn't remember the journey back into the manager's office, but somehow there he was. Mr. Philbin stared up at him expectantly.
"Well, what do you say, son? Are you ready to fulfill your destiny, to achieve what you were put on this earth to do?"
"I am, sir," Ricky replied resolutely.
Beetroots and four walls and an executive office couldn't keep him contained for long, however.
Ricky dug the studs of his Adidas Predator boots into the turf. It almost felt sacrilegious ruining the sacred grounds of the Wembley Stadium. Still, if things went his way, he'd be kissing the selfsame turf in equal measures of elation and gratitude. But for now, the ground, gravity, and thought were hindrances. He needed to defy all of those things.
From an 18-yard box, he could see the linesman keeping a keen eye on the rabble of players, heaving and sweating in a pile. It was Leighton Baines at the corner flag. While Ricky and he weren't well acquainted, he received a few of his corner kicks in training, and there was no doubt Leighton was a marksman. This was it. The set piece that could change it all. The slap of a leather boot on ball sprayed into the air, followed immediately by the white orb sailing towards him. Every fiber in every muscle of Ricky's body, every joint, every synapse, now engaged in perfect union to attain a single goal.
13 years after turning down Mr. Philbin's proposition, at the age of 31, Ricky Lambert was called to make his international debut against Scotland. It would be the self-same day as the birth of his third child, Bella, and he would go on to score his first goal for England with his first touch in the game. A year later, he would sign to Liverpool FC with a 2-year contract.
Well, thanks for having a drink with the Don and the Duke.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.